Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If you lost Survivor and you're feeling down, David and Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why Blank lost. And this is why Blank lost. Oh, baby, this is why Blank lost.
Welcome back to Why Blank Lost. I'm David Bloomberg, and just like that classic story of the bunny rabbit in the mailbox, my co-host Jessica Lewis and I are here once again in your ears or on your screen.
As more Marianne, bunnies, mailboxes, and yes, such.
As Marianne at one point said, you may ask yourself, how did that bunny get in the mailbox? You may ask yourself, where is that large automobile? You may ask yourself, where does that highway go to? Same as it ever was. Same as it ever was.
No, we're not doing this again. You're not going to start. I don't know what's happening right now. Is this going to turn into a rant? Because no one wants to hear it.
Oh, sorry. I got caught in a Talking Heads song loop there.
Okay. So that's better.
Yeah. It was that whole rabbit question sent me there. Sorry. It sends you spinning off in one direction, sends me in another, apparently. And
I am over the bunny rabbit story. Yes, so I'm done with the bunny rabbit.
I promise no more bunny in her mailbox references. I swear on my lucky rabbit's foot.
All I know is I'm really happy that Mike was like, we got to put an end to this.
Yeah.
And that's it. Yeah. Thank God.
So since I'm not making any more bunny references, let's take our usual trip down the rabbit hole of Survivor gameplay to compare Daniel's game to the rules for winning that I originally wrote way back after season one.
Stop you because I'm curious how long it took you to be like, how many bunny analogies and stories and things can I come up with in the first 2 minutes of the podcast? How many bunny related things?
It didn't take very long. I mean, I came up with them about as fast as bunny rabbits create more bunnies.
I'm sorry, listeners. We'll move on.
We'll hop along.
Oh my God! You're doing this just to frustrate me. I can tell.
Me. I would never do such a
really
thing.
No, you never would. Never. No. I think we were just talking about that being nice, right? Was that what we were talking about?
Well, pretending. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. As the rules do state.
Yes. Yes. And those rules I've been updating ever since season one. We'll look at all the non-spoiler information available to us from what we saw on TV, interviews, social media, and secret scenes. And I know I've said this before, but I should have the season 42 version on the website before the next podcast.
Broken
it's been a busy
promises.
Week.
Broken
it's been
promises.
A busy week. Okay. It's just, too many bunnies in mailboxes that I had to clear out. So, but you can still see the Survivor 41 version at our dedicated page, robhaswebsite.com/YXLostFeed. Mm-hmm. Now, as usual, we have a few things to discuss before we go down into that rabbit hole. The first isn't from this episode, but is me wishing my son a happy birthday today.
Oh, happy birthday. We're recording.
So by the time this goes out, it won't be anymore. But yes, happy birthday. He's 26.
Which means my word.
Not only am I older than most Survivor players, but even my son is older than several Survivor players.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Season. Yeah.
Well, happy belated birthday to your son as well.
Yes. Well, I thank you on his behalf.
Is he is this the son that comments on our podcast to you?
Yes. Yes. Oh, I think I owe you a couple. I don't remember.
I thoroughly enjoy the commentary. Yes. So please keep that coming.
Yes.
I love it.
Now, next up is an announcement that for anyone who is listening or watching us in time, you can get another dose of us on Instagram Live.
Oh, yes. I forgot about that.
Yes.
I was confused. I'm like, oh, God, what did I miss? Yeah. What is happening right now? I need to drink more wine.
Or less.
Fair point.
Mm-hmm. We will be taking over the RHAP account on Sunday, April 10th at 4 o'clock Eastern time. That's 3 o'clock Central, 2 o'clock Mountain, 1 o'clock Pacific. I almost forgot what the different time zones were. But yes, I hope many of you will join us there because Jessica just wants to be able to talk and not have me say, no, we're not in that rule yet.
I know. I just want to be able to jump around and talk about anything and everything and not be so structured.
Yes. So again, Instagram Live on the RHAP account.
And we might have invited some people to jump in and
we'll
say
see.
Hi.
We'll see. And now some breaking news that is new even to you, Jessica.
What is happening tonight?
Yes, it's breaking news are happening now. we all heard from Daniel in his interviews that his shoulder is much better now. But my source, Deep Survivor Throat, has informed me that Daniel dislocated his shoulder again on Thursday. Yes,
this Thursday?
Yes, after telling everybody in interviews, after doing all the interviews, saying it was better.
What was he, like doing handstands or something, interviews?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I knew that Survivor players had a hard day of interviews, but I didn't know it was that hard.
My word. Yeah, stop doing the challenges, Daniel. You don't have to anymore.
Yes. So, Daniel, I hope you get well soon. And, you know, stay away from snorkeling or else your loved ones will think you're faking.
No spear fishing for you.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Getting to the actual episode. We saw Jonathan once again save his tribe. I already made a TikTok about it, but he looked like a lion trapped in a cage, pacing around while Omar was having trouble figuring out the puzzle. And there was a secret scene in which Omar said he just didn't see the pattern right away, and that threw him off. Mm-hmm. But Lindsay did, which was why she was able to help. And she regretted afterwards, of course, not doing it herself, but said, well, Omar's usually the puzzle guy.
Right.
Still, both of the two independently said it wasn't so bad to not dominate and draw attention to themselves again.
Right.
Although the other players aren't going to forget. Yeah.
How can you forget? He even described himself. He's 6'4", mm-hmm. 250 pounds. I don't think anyone is going to suddenly forget that Jonathan is there.
Yeah. Plus, he took them from losing to coming in second.
Yeah.
Now,
I do think it's going to be an interesting shift to see how that all develops because we've said it before. We've talked about it a lot. You don't have an opportunity to interact with everyone from the other mm-hmm. tribes. And so you make determinations about people based upon what you see when you go to challenges and what you hear when you're at challenges. And sometimes you have a very difficult read on those people because there's not much that you can necessarily gather in those moments. But I think Jonathan it's pretty clear what he's going to be bringing to the table come the merge.
No, he's going to be bringing the table.
Oh, that's true. He will be carrying the merge feast table with the food on it. He'll go get the food in the ocean and bring it to them. Yeah. So I think it's going to be a very interesting thing to watch because he's just on full display and has been. And like we talked about before, I'm trying to be good. Okay. But obviously Jeff Probst is a fan and talks about him very loudly at every challenge. So it's going to be tough. It's definitely going to be tough for Jonathan, I think, once everybody comes together.
Yes, it will. Now, over on Ika, I thought it was pretty funny that Rox Roy just now realized he doesn't have a great social game. I mean, the thing is,
it took him some time.
And the thing is, I'm not sure how he arrived there from what happened. Because they strategically cut him out of the swappy vote, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But his social game issues have been more about bossing people around, criticizing, and being more worried about the camp than about the people. So even though he has said, I need help with my social game, he also doesn't even know why he needs help with his social game.
Right. I think it is interesting to see that when you get left out of a vote, obviously that makes your head spin and you're trying to figure out, what did I miss? What did I do wrong? And so maybe you start picking apart different components of yourself when you're out on the island. And so maybe that was what it took for him to take kind of a step back and say, well, what have I been doing wrong? And he determined it was a social game, but it wasn't necessarily the social game. It was just more what he was doing, you know? So yeah, I do think that it's interesting that that's what it took for him to make that realization, right. But it seems like that could certainly benefit him moving forward. If he had that realization now, good for him.
Yeah. Although it sounds like, I mean, Tori's going to, not surprising to anyone, Tori's going to jump ship at the first opportunity. So
she might, but there was a secret scene that we got to see.
I heard about it. I missed it. I don't know how I missed that secret scene. I saw someone reference it.
Yeah. About him. He caught an octopus.
Oh, where was that? I literally checked Paramount Plus today.
So it popped up when I was reading, I think it was one of the exit interviews on Entertainment Weekly. It was one of the pop-ups. Yeah.
I missed Dalton's. That's where it was.
Yes. Okay. Oh, and Dalton's, can I just say, I love that he at the very end says that this is the condensed and edited down version. I want to see the full version
To be fair, they all say that.
I know, but this one in particular, right. I don't know about you, but when I was reading all of Daniel's like exit press, it was like really, really going really, really fast. I just felt like I had to read at a faster pace just because the way that he was just taking over the interviews, he'd get asked a question and be like, no, we're not starting there. If you don't understand clearly what I said, we have to go back. We have to talk about this because we have to talk about this first. And you have to talk about that before we can get to that because we can't start there. If you want to know the full story, we got it. And I'm just like, whoa, okay. Like, he doesn't even need to be asked a question. He will just tell you what he thinks.
Well, good. I mean, he's telling you the important stuff. Like, he has listened to so many podcasts and interviews. He knows what people want.
Right. And he was ready because he did say, please, I hope they don't roast me to death in his.
Yes. And so, I promise, Daniel, we won't roast you to death.
We'll stop before we get
there. What did they say in The Princess Bride? We will roast you to pain.
To pain.
He's got enough pain with his shoulder. He doesn't need
more. That's terrible, poor guy.
Yeah. Speaking of pain, I'm going to take a moment to address a topic that most people have understood previously, but apparently a few didn't. To repeat what I said last week and also in the first week, even though it turned out not to actually be Tori saying the potato phrase, it didn't matter to the point I was making. If someone is listening and wants to argue with me about this on social media some more, please go back. All I'm asking is you please go back and listen to what I actually said both of those times. That's all. That's all I'm asking. And so
are we leaving it there? Are we tabling this?
Yes. Other than I will just say it would have been so easy for producers to avoid this issue by not putting in things like this, putting in someone else reading a phrase instead. There was also a spoiler for Marianne finding it in the preview from, you know, that was shown at season 41. And so all they have to do is not do that. They just need to consider the consequences.
And here's what I want to do. I don't want people to give you a hard time because I know they've already given you a hard time with this opinion.
Well, I don't mind a hard time as long as it's based in fact.
Well, and I will say, as someone who was on Survivor and ends up, you know, you paying close attention to anything that's put out. So if there's any edited component, you're watching very closely because, well, am I going to be in this? What's going to happen? Is this going to include me? Who's going to be in this? And I will say, in our season, they had created the I don't even know what to call it. I know there's a term for it, but when they are introducing all of the players that mm-hmm. they don't show anymore, you each get like a little scene and they have your name, right?
Oh, the, oh my God, the title sequence.
Yes. They actually, in ours, had an image of Jay wearing the merge buff.
Yeah.
And so that became like a big thing because all of a sudden right. people were like, oh my God, like Jay clearly makes the merge because he's wearing a different color buff. And so it does happen. Like mistakes certainly happen. Right. And I know that there's a lot of editing that goes on. There's a lot of things that go on. And I think the reason why it becomes frustrating is that sometimes you just don't want to know these things.
Right.
Regardless of whether or not that's what happens, even if they're trying to right. throw you off and they're trying to make you think something different, you just want to be able to watch the show and look forward to what is going to transpire. And if it's leading you down a path of what didn't actually happen, or they've just completely like given away something because they've included something they clearly should not have included, like mm-hmm. Jay's merge buff.
Right.
It's just for the viewers, it just spoils it a little bit. And yeah. so I understand that there's this idea of what a spoiler is, and maybe they don't think they're spoiling anything, but you can still be affecting the people who watch the show negatively by including things that throw off the storyline.
Right. And all I'm saying is they've had over 20 years of doing this. They should be able to do it by now. Mm-hmm. And so, but you know what? Look at my shirt. I still support them. I even supported their store and bought yet another Survivor. Did I need another Survivor shirt? No, I did not need another Survivor shirt. But this one is cool. I saw it. Davey from David versus Goliath saw it on Twitter, and he was like, oh, I've got to go buy that. And I was like, yeah, I'm trying to stop myself because I have enough. But I said, I know it's going to get to me. And sure enough, when it went on sale, I was like, I've got to get it now.
Is on fire.
Yes, it is. It is on mm-hmm. fire.
You know what's funny? You know? I don't have any. It's like, I've never gone on to like.
This. Well, you have one.
Well, no, but I'm saying like, I've never gone on and like purchased one for myself. Everything I have, except I did buy the old school Survivor, which was not through official, CBS.
Right.
But I did purchase that. But everything that I have that is Survivor related, they were gifts from someone else, which is lovely. I appreciate it very much. But I just think it's funny. I should have all kinds of t-shirts and hats, and I just never did.
Yeah. Yeah. But, well, I think they should have provided it to you along with your a free Paramount Plus subscription, but apparently they didn't do that.
They don't do that either.
Yeah. So, all right. Do you have anything else you want to discuss from this episode before we move on?
No, I think we can go. I'm excited to just talk about the episode.
Okay. Well, we can't go just yet because we did receive a request, a special request from a regular listener. Mm-hmm. Many of us on social media have seen Daniel criticized for his gameplay, and not just criticized, pretty much attacked. It's ridiculous. But what this listener wants to know is not just us saying what Daniel did wrong, but what we think Daniel should have done, in particular at four key moments. When he learned Chanel lost his vote or her vote, after the votes were read before the negotiation began, after Daniel realized he was on his own at that tribal council, and what he should have done afterwards. I think it's a great question. Mm-hmm. And so we will carry over our guest professor status from when we were on the Patron Survivor Academy.
Ooh, I love this.
With Rob a couple weeks ago. And we will do our best to include these things in the discussion.
So are we doing it separate or just inclusive?
Inclusive. Okay. I think it'll come up naturally.
All right.
As a matter of fact, I had some of these answers already in my notes before I even got the request from the listener.
Nice.
So, but we still have one more thing before we move on to see what Daniel did. And that is to mention the rules we're about to discuss come in a shorter and much more colorful.
Yes, they do.
Version. Right, I can't say the word. Colorful. There it is.
Right there.
Version. Ta-da. Yeah. go to robhaswebsite.com/yxlostfeed and scroll down. There you go. You scroll. Look, poster.
Mm-hmm.
And then click on it and order it. There you go. Boom. The internet is so easy.
It really is easy. And there's other things they can purchase too, correct?
Yes, there are.
Crazy.
But wait, there's more. You can get a poster t-shirt. And if you keep scrolling down, you can get a checklist. T-shirt. And you can get a checklist mug. And you can get sweatshirts. Mm-hmm. So again, all of this is at robhasawebsite.com/yxlostfeed.
You should definitely check it all out. And I will say again, I do actually own 2 sweatshirts and a t-shirt that I got from the website, which were sent to me. So. Yes.
There you go.
And I did actually create my own t-shirts when we got the poster made. So I have one of those too.
That's
so
true.
Maybe I
That's
bought
true.
That one. I guess.
Yeah,
that count
I guess you, I guess so.
I did.
And you
pay
certainly,
for this.
You certainly bought this. Yes.
I did certainly yes. buy that.
Yes.
Yeah.
It just
I
wasn't
own that.
For you.
That is mine right there. I just share it with the world.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're going to take a quick break for our sponsors and we'll be right back. We're back, so let's get back to the show. All right. So Daniel said in his first tribal council that he would lose because he was constantly in a state of paranoia. My Twitter immediately lit up as people suggested he was coming for our jobs. But was he actually paranoid? At that moment in time, nobody was out to get him, and he actually seemed to be in a pretty good place in the game. So was that really the reason? In this episode, I felt like the show was trying to blame his ouster on going swimming. Was that it? It seemed like High and Lydia had a conversation similar to the one on Ika last week, with Daniel as Tori, the one who is more transparent, and Chanel as Swathi, the one who was seen more of a hidden schemer. Except this tribe decided the one who seemed more transparent was the one who needed to go. So was that it? Paranoia? Swimming? Being transparent schemer? Some combination? None of the above? It's time to figure out why Daniel lost.
We got a lot to dig through.
We do. So, in a secret scene that I did see, Daniel said his number one rule was don't get medevac. And while I agree that's a pretty good rule, I feel like it's kind of implied.
Yeah,
so we won't be
adding
that.
It didn't make
that.
The poster.
No, it did not. Maybe that's the one up in the corner there where they're holding on for dear life to the tent. So we'll stick to the first and most important rule being the need to scheme and plot. Daniel obviously understood how much a part of the game this was and also showed he knew the difference between the game and real life by talking in this tribal council about how just because you lie on Survivor doesn't mean you lie in real life. So many times we've seen the two equated and they just aren't.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
It's possible I may have already made a TikTok on that too.
It's possible that you've already made one on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, besides knowing this, he also did a good job with strategy early on. He went, in his words, all in on Chanel as his number one. But Mike also thought Daniel was his number one. And I clearly thought they were tight as well. So he was in a great position, thanks to the way he had handled things, until he wasn't.
Yeah.
And this is where things get a little sticky when it comes to the rules. I think the best way to handle this is to jump over that tribal council for the moment. So if you want to add anything about him in this rule before that tribal council, let's do that now. Then we'll skip to after. And then later on, we'll circle back and deal with what happened immediately leading up to
the
end.
Time out. From the man who gets mad at me for not following some organizational pattern that you have a preference for, and now you're confusing me. What are we doing? What tribal council are we talking about?
In an effort to stick to the rules, I'm going out of time order.
So
because time is a big ball of wibbly wobbly stuff.
So we're skipping the rock one and we're going right to the one he gets voted out.
No, we're skipping. So, OK, do you have anything to talk about before their first tribal council to add to what I said?
Before their first tribal council?
Yes.
I think Yes, I do, actually.
Okay.
Shocking, right? I have things to say.
No, I just should have. I just should have. I should have phrased my question much better.
I was definitely confused. I really look at what happened with Daniel as like an incredible distraction, because he was an incredible distraction for Lydia and Hai. Because I do think that, as you said, he was really in a great place.
Mm-hmm.
And because he was in a great place, I don't know if maybe it was just he became comfortable with that great place that he was in. But it was as soon as there was a little bit of a nugget, there was a little bit of a turn. It was almost like Lydia and Hai just completely took advantage of it. And I just don't know if maybe the strategy that Daniel was trying to create was to play a great game with so many people who, and I'm not trying to downplay the tribe that he was with at all, but we've said this before, everybody comes into this game wanting to play a different type of game, right? And I feel like some people come into this game and they want to gain traction. I feel like Daniel came into this game with traction. Mm-hmm. And then it was almost like there was too much too soon, and other people utilize that to then further their self, like Hai. I think Hai is a perfect example of it. And so there is an idea to kind of a slow roll when you want to play this game. And unfortunately, he kind of did that backwards. He came in too fast and then decided after, and I know we haven't gotten there yet,
right,
when he made some pretty aggressive moves and said some things and put things out there, then all of a sudden he was like, I want to slow roll this now. And he couldn't anymore, because Chanel was like, nope, this is what we're doing. So I feel for him, because he really just became his own worst enemy just because other people took advantage of the situation that had been created.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll go way more in depth on that first tribal council of theirs in a couple of rules, I think. But to go after that tribal council, like you just said, they get back. He wanted to wait until the next morning to talk about what happened. Now, I don't know that it would have mattered. But, and we said this beforehand, this is not us just looking, you know, 2020 hindsight. This is like, no, we said this beforehand. He should have been rushing to explain himself.
Yes.
Now, maybe his brain was in a tizzy and he really needed to think it through, given all that had happened all at once. And the fact that, you know, as he mentioned in interviews, they hadn't been eating. But it's just something he needed to find a way to do.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I don't know if it would have mattered, but by giving Chanel the chance to talk first, she got to lay down the base of her argument.
Yes.
And that can have an effect. The first person to get something out there definitely has an effect on everything that comes after.
Yes. And I will say this, too. He is a lawyer, right?
Yes.
And I happen to be a lawyer as well.
What?
And I know, crazy, right?
Yeah.
And I will say that one of the kind of ideas when you are formulating a plan for a trial and what witness you're going to put on first versus second, third, fourth, the one of the biggest components that we are reminded of, and especially with our like our opening arguments, people are going to remember what you say first, and people are going to remember what you say last. And so you really need to get in there first. And so he did miss an incredible opportunity to get ahead of it, as opposed to letting Chanel do it. And I feel like that was certainly a missed moment for him. It was a missed opportunity. And especially when you are presenting it in the same way that you did in tribal council, right? When he said to Hai, to everyone really, where he said, I just want everyone to know, like, I am not going to rocks. You have given up all of your ability at that point in time to formulate any type of an argument, any potential that you have to change things in your own direction and make things happen. You've just handed it. You've given it away. And he did the same exact thing when they got back to tribal council and said, I don't want to talk about this right now. Let's do it in the morning. immediately, you have given up all of the power. Chanel grabbed it and she ran with it.
Yeah. And she even grabbed it nicely. She's like, well, you could do what you want, but I would like to talk. You know, she,
right.
You
know, it was great.
She didn't
great.
Even have to be mean about it.
Mm-hmm. It was great.
Yeah. Now, to follow up on his next moves, I think we need to move into rule two, which we've kind of dipped our toes in already. And that is, of course, the second rule says not to scheme and plot too much and to keep your scheming secret. Now, even though Daniel prepared to try to make people think he wasn't schemy, going so far as to grow out his hair longer, so he'd look, in his words, goofy, not sneaky, that didn't help much in terms of keeping his scheming secret when it all got blown wide open at that first tribal council.
Yeah.
You know,
well, and I'm curious if this is very similar to something we've discussed, even like with Swathi, we were talking about this. When you come to realize that the young individual that you were playing this game with that you feel like is kind of a daughter to you or someone that you could almost care for in this, and then you find out, whoa, this person is completely outplaying me and is doing so much more than I thought. And I'm curious if the same thing happened with him as well, where he came in with this, I want everyone to perceive me this way. And maybe they were perceiving him that way at the beginning.
Well,
and then
possible,
all of a sudden,
yeah.
when they saw what he was willing to do and what he
what
did
have
do.
You done? Yes.
Yes. And then you realize, wait a second. This guy's been playing all of us.
Yeah.
And so it has a more detrimental effect on you as a player when people suddenly realize what you've really been doing by trying to not appear schemy makes you look even more schemy.
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, whether it was that or just everything that happened, either way, he got an immediate, like in the snap of a finger, immediate reputation for plotting too much.
Mm-hmm.
Though he made his case in interviews that he really wasn't doing that. He was just playing Survivor. Unfortunately, part of playing Survivor is, well, sometimes getting tagged for scheming and plotting too much. And let's face it. He convinced Mike that he was his number one and then turned around and told all of Mike's info to his real number one, Chanel. And he considered voting Mike out to stop the idols from being played. So he was definitely caught in most, if not all of that. You know, it's, but most of it, this falls into the area of keeping your scheming secret. Because as Daniel said, playing Survivor means you should have multiple allies.
Right. And I don't necessarily blame him for sharing that information with Chanel. If Chanel truly was his number one, if Mike wants to believe that they are, and we talked about this with Swathi, like the language matters. So however it was presented to Mike, if Mike wants to believe that, Mike certainly can believe that.
I think Daniel admitted on the show. He was like, you told me I was your number one. Yeah, I did. I was lying.
Well, so this is why it becomes more offensive, right? Because those words matter. And so for Mike, someone who is a very loyal individual and someone who, if he's got your back, he's got your back, to then find out that really doesn't mean anything.
Till you die.
Till you die. That's right. But we're not roasting him to death. We're just roasting him to pain.
Pain,
remember?
Yes.
So I do think that you, again, have to be very mindful of who you are speaking to when you're making these one-on-one deals, because there are going to be times when you need to lie to this person, when you need to share information with somebody else and backstab someone. And if you have appeared in a certain fashion and then all of a sudden they find out something completely different, it can be more offensive. Also, because of the person that you're relaying that information to. And I think Mike is one of those people. Mike didn't come into Survivor to be a big strategist and a game player. I mean, he wants to play the game, but he's going to play it Mike's way, which is going to be very loyal and strong and supportive of his team. Not like this manipulating strategist that I think Daniel wanted to be, but he wanted to do it in a way that no one would figure it out. Well, unfortunately, everybody figured it out.
Yeah. And, you know, that actually goes to the point I was going to bring up next, which is Daniel decided to, in his words, use the Rob Cesternino strategy of being honest about his dishonesty. We saw him admit to Mike, like I just mentioned, how he had lied to him repeatedly. And he also described in interviews how he told Hai everything that happened up to that point. I believe he was trying to prove that all of that was behind him and he'd be loyal going forward. I also think it was absolutely the wrong time to throw literally everything at the other players to tell them how much of a liar he had been after he was just exposed for being of a liar.
Yeah.
I feel like the idea behind being honest about dishonesty is more the Dr. Will school of thought, convincing people that you're lying to everyone but them, not convincing them that you've been lying to them for the past week.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. And it, again, this is one of those moments in Survivor where sometimes you have to let things settle.
Yes.
And you need to let people have an opportunity to think things over and review. If there's this knee-jerk reaction, which I know sounds like completely in opposite to what we've just been talking about with Chanel jumping on and saying things, but that doesn't mean you can't talk about it. But you also, again, have to think about where everybody's headspace is in that moment. And if people are already upset with you and people are already unhappy with what's transpired and they don't like what they've been hearing, and then you pile on and go, well, guess what? By the way, there's some more things I should probably tell you. I've been lying to you since day one. And let me tell you all of the things I have done. Not
again,
the best
again,
look.
But wait, there's more.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Not the best look in that moment. I think that moment needs to be handled the way that Chanel did. You need to try to defuse the situation. And I think this is a great time to talk about a secret scene that there was between Chanel and Daniel in regards to what happened with Lydia and the rock vote or potential, you know, rock draw, I should say. Because he really took her to task in that moment when they were talking and wanting her to admit to the fact that she did tell him to vote for Lydia, that that's what she mouthed to him during tribal. Right. And she looked at him and said, I'm not going to tell them that.
Right.
And she's like, I'll tell you, but I'm certainly not going to tell them. And so she is reading the room and she knows what information she needs to tell to a particular person like Daniel. Like, OK, so, yes, he wants to hear it from my mouth. I will tell him, but I'm certainly not going to tell everybody else. And then if he runs back and says, guess what? Chanel told me that she really said that. They're probably not going to believe him.
Doesn't matter. Yeah. Right. You can tell them anything you want at that point.
Exactly.
It is funny because on Survivor Academy last week, where Rob had Matt on, and they were discussing that very thing. And Rob, I think it was Rob, suggested, no, she shouldn't have even told him. She should have been like, no, I never told you that. You must have misunderstood. But to my mind, no, why bother? Why bother piling on another lie? You could tell him the truth.
Right.
No one's going to believe him anyway.
Mm-hmm. And then we're all going to see that replay at Tribal when she says it.
Right. Yes.
When she stands there denying it, going, I never said that.
Yeah.
Lydia.
Yeah.
Oh, Lydia.
Yeah. Now, so in addition to that strategy, the telling everyone, you know, that, telling everyone how much of a liar he was.
Diarrhea of the mouth.
Yes. Liarrhea. he described in an interview something that you already brought up, that he was going to just chill. And that was hopefully going to take the heat off. And in one interview, he said, if you want to stay around, you have to ensure that those people trust you. And the best way to get them to trust you again is to not be a schemer. And that's a good encapsulation of this rule. And he may well have been thinking about it when he decided, you know what? How do I show now I'm not scheming? I'm going to go fishing. You know, like, hey, look at me. I'm not plotting over there. I'm right out here where you can see me.
I'm doing nothing but fishing.
Yes.
I'm not talking to the fish. Now, I think
maybe he was looking for those crabs that Tiffany was trying to get to vote for her.
That's quite possible. She was gathering up votes. Yeah. I do think that, again, there's a good method here. There's a good idea that you don't want people to see you in that fashion. But for him, they already do. Like, this is where they're at. This is what they have been convinced of. And they haven't been convinced of it because somebody else has been telling them. They're convinced of it because he did it himself in front of everyone. Right. Yeah. And then he told them, in case you missed it, I also did X, Y, and Z. So it was like, there was no getting around the fact that he was scheming and plotting a lot, in addition to him then saying, here's extra. So then in that moment where suddenly he's like, oh, no, no, wait, 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 wait. I'm not scheming and plotting. I'm going to go fishing. You know, someone like High is not going to fall for that. Suddenly, yeah. It's not like you're just going to wipe the slate. Wipe the slate. Look, I can't even speak.
Slate.
Like, wipe yes. the slate clean.
There we go.
To be like, suddenly, oh, look at him. He's such a team player and he wants to get us fish and feed everyone. Isn't that great? No, they're going to be looking at him and figuring out something else that's right. up with him. Like, why is he doing this? I thought his arm was broken. What is going on?
He must be looking for an idol in the coral. Yeah. You know? So yeah. Yeah. Now leading from this, one thing I take issue with Rob saying on the recap podcast with T-Bird was that at this point in the game, Daniel was doing more scheming and Chanel was doing less. But as we just discussed, that wasn't it at all. In Daniel's interviews, and from what we saw on the show, after the blow up, Daniel dialed everything back while Chanel ramped it up. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, Daniel even told everyone he didn't want to scramble after they lost immunity. So, you know, Rob, sorry, I got to disagree with you on that one.
Well, and this brings me back to what I said at the beginning.
And where if we're not here next week, that's why, because I disagreed with Rob.
He disagreed with Rob. That he really was an incredible distraction. He is what every Survivor player wants on their tribe. You want someone who suddenly just blows up and then you just keep sprinkling more fuel to that fire. That is what everyone hopes to have. And that is exactly what Chanel suddenly had. She had this person that she thought was going to be her number one. And she was included in that blow up, right? But she managed to take a step back because she was playing it slow at the beginning. If there was one thing that I think we can all agree about Chanel is that she didn't come out swinging, you know, when the game started, where he did. And so she had the ability to then utilize that to her benefit. And she could look at it and go, Mike, he lied to you. He lied to me, too. Can you believe that? You know, you can feed off of what he did to other people in order to step up and elevate your own game, which is exactly what Chanel started doing. You start comparing notes. And of course, Chanel knows everything he did because they were like this. You know, they were number ones for each other and she knew all of the information. And I'm not sure if she shared that she knew about Mike's.
I mean, if I were her, I wouldn't have. I mean, he probably did. I believe he did. But if I were her, I wouldn't have shared anything because that implicates her. So just.
Well, I'm just, if she wanted to throw him even further under the bus, she could have said, you know what, Mike, he also told me that you've got an advantage. And again, that's just going to keep feeding that, boy, he's such a little schemer. Mm-hmm. And I really do think that though he was trying so hard to play a great Survivor game, I just think it was just at a pace much faster than anyone else was playing in his tribe, which then just put him in a terrible position when it blew up.
Right. And we'll get to this in a few minutes here. Was it a situation that would normally blow up this way? No. This is a very weird situation, but sometimes stuff happens.
Right. And that's the thing about Survivor is you never know what is going to occur in the game and you never know how the game is going to unfold. So the last thing you want to do is create this place that you now find yourself in that you can't get out of because of the way that you played out the gate. Like I really do think that there is part of you that just needs to kind of sit back and listen more and try to play the game as slow as you can, as much as the game will allow you to do so.
Right. Now, just to kind of cap off some of this discussion, in an early interview quote, he said, where he was talking about the best way to get people to trust you is not to be a schemer. He ended that by saying, I didn't do it well enough. Now, I'm not sure that's really the case. I think rather it was that he was in a position not just that he had a hill to climb in order to convince people he was trustworthy. He had Mount Kilimanjaro, and he was starting out deep in the Valley of Distrust.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as Hai said in Tribal Council, once trust has been broken, it's very hard to get back. And, you know, that answers what was the fourth question posed by the listener. There just wasn't much he could do at that point. Could he have done things before then that we'll discuss in a minute? Yeah. But once he got to that point, I think the die was cast. And I'm talking about the shot in the dark die. And I just don't know what he could have done.
The only thing that could have saved him was a tribe swap.
Yeah, basically.
That's what I got.
Yeah.
I mean, it is, again, because this is what happens when you have destroyed trust between people. It is almost impossible to rebuild that trust when you're playing a game like Survivor that is built upon trust. And sometimes things don't play out the way that you want them to. Sometimes you get blamed for things that you weren't necessarily the only person involved in, but you need a scapegoat, right? And so I do think for the position that he found himself in, it was a very difficult one because he was really kind of all alone in it. It wasn't like there was a bunch of other people he'd be like, but no, wait, what about this one and that one? And they did that with me too. And then there was no place for him to go. I mean, he talked about how he found himself to be all alone, which is a very scary spot to be in Survivor.
Yeah. Now he did have Chanel, and you know, there might be the question like, okay, Chanel was supposedly with Daniel in the prior tribal council, and the two of them together tried to set up the fake split vote. But what Lydia saw, what Hai saw, was Daniel actually casting a vote against Lydia and then actively trying to get her out.
Yes.
That stings more than just, well, you were involved in the plan too.
Which is interesting that Chanel used that moment to be like, I don't have a vote. I'm not getting involved. I'm not saying anything, which I don't necessarily agree with Mike and Chanel's approach to that, because they were looking at going to rocks if they didn't get themselves involved in that moment. But I do think your point is a very good one, that it does sting when you are the one who's getting that vote. And this person, you know, there's no secret when you're sitting there all discussing who should go home. It's not like going up and writing a name on a parchment and nobody knows who did it. It's very broadcast. And so I do think that that becomes very difficult. And when you look at Lydia, as he's saying, what, will you hold this against me? And she's like, of course not. Well, no, she will. She definitely will. But she's very good at being very,
why would I ever hold it against you?
I would never. No, let's vote out Jenny. It's fine. Yeah, like, really, it's okay. I promise you, I'm not going to hold this against you. But,
yes. All right. So from here, I think it makes sense to jump all the way to the seventh rule, which covers idols and advantages, including how to handle and deal with them, but also deals with other rules and game mechanics. I mean, heck, the poster, I'm moving the wrong way. It's there. The poster even has a picture of you after going to rocks. Mm-hmm. So certainly this is the correct place to discuss that tribal council with the combination of the missing votes, Daniel trying to get the rules explained for who would have to do what, and the avoidance of rocks.
Yes, there's so much there.
Yeah. So ever since that first tribal council that they went to, I wondered why Daniel didn't just change his vote. And I've mentioned it here. The first time they tied, so he wouldn't have to go through everything that he ended up having to go through.
Mm-hmm.
Rob asked him, and he said he did it out of loyalty. Plus, he was also worried that Hai might flip in a way similar to Will Wall worrying about how you could flip at your tribal council that ended up in rocks. But there's a big difference to me, because in your situation, there were a lot of people.
Yes.
They would never have come to consensus.
No.
Obviously, they didn't. Here, there were two people.
Yeah.
Even if Hai had flipped, so what? It would have shown each other that they were both flexible and they could more easily have come to consensus.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see the downside at all. But That's exactly it. I don't see the downside. Daniel, as he explained in his interviews, had a very, very different view of how the tribal discussion was going to go if the tie remained. And I think he relied on that view too much. You ever have a situation where you're like, oh, I know exactly how I'm going to plot this out and how this is going to work? I feel like that was him. And that's why he did it this way.
Yeah. I do think a lot of it is overthinking. I really do. I think that he is such a super fan and loves the game so much that he's worked through all these permutations. And in his mind, the analytical thinking through that process makes sense. Right. His approach to, I do not want to go to rocks, nobody wants to. Like, that's not a bad thing, but it's a bad way to start your argument. It's a bad way to present yourself in that moment, because survivors, or well, tribal councils like this in Survivor are all about who's controlling the final outcome and how are you going to get there. And I was not someone who took the correct approach. And in this situation, you need to, I'm doing this. This is what's happening. And I think he just thought through things way too analytically. And he thought that Chanel and Mike were going to see what he was doing and understand what he was doing.
Exactly. Because
he had a vision.
He had a vision.
This is what will happen and they will see it.
Right. I mean, first, he admitted he didn't see it as a game of chicken, but Hyde did.
Right.
He just thought he, Mike, and Michelle would gang up on Hyde to pressure him into changing his vote.
Yeah.
And that's why he asked Jeff to clarify who would be drawing rocks. And again, this is where things get even more skewed to me, because Daniel said in interviews that the point of him asking the question was to communicate to them, you don't need to worry. I've got your back. I'm not going to force you to go to rocks. You're safe with me. Let's the three of us get Hyde to flip, basically, and change his vote.
But wouldn't that have been the better approach?
Yes. So I think what was actually communicated to them was, holy crap, our fate is in Daniel's hands and we don't want to go to rocks. So we're going to stay out of this.
Yeah. And this is one of those moments in Survivor where you just have to be brutally honest. I just really feel like if it's do or die moment. And if he wants to know that Chanel and Mike are with him, that's the time to make the announcement. You don't make the announcement. Okay, I am not going to rocks. You don't start there. You say, okay, Mike, Chanel, we're all together in this, right? Like, we all want to vote the same way. We all wanted to vote Lydia out. Hi was the only one that wanted to vote Jenny out. So this should be an easy decision for the group of us to make together. Because you start this group think idea, and then you can get some momentum behind it. But if you come out with, I'm not doing this, then you've really put yourself on an island. And yes, and so do I think that Mike and Chanel should have stepped it back? No, as I've already said, I don't think that that was necessarily the best thing for them to do, because rocks were a possibility. But I do think that they should have been more involved. But the way he presented it to them, he thought they were going to see all of these things that were not being easily put forth for anyone to actually see, because that's not the read I got when I saw that happening either.
Right.
I certainly wasn't sitting there, but it did not appear like it was a united front at that moment.
Right. And, you know, as he told Dalton, I was catastrophically wrong. That's probably the biggest mistake of a read I ever made in Survivor, because the first thing that happened when I tried to go to Chanel and Mike, they both run for the hills. And yeah, I just think there was a ton of miscommunication there. You know, when he was trying to encourage Chanel to help him in the discussion with Hyde, she took it as him blaming her for the Lydia vote. So she didn't want to get in the middle of that. So I think that was part of her running for the hills.
But also, what is he doing to her in that moment? Chanel, you told me to vote for Lydia. So it's putting her on blast in front of everyone as well. Right. And so you're revealing everyone's secrets. And so all of a sudden she has to be on the defensive and be like, what are you talking about? I didn't say this. So it really becomes a very difficult component, because if you think about it, either it's going to be Jenny or Lydia that's going home. Mm-hmm. And if Chanel is acknowledging the fact that she threw Lydia under the bus and said, vote out Lydia, and that it was her idea. Well, if Lydia doesn't get voted out, who's Lydia going to be mad at? She's going to be mad at Chanel. So it put Chanel in a very difficult spot in that moment. And so I do think that there was a different approach that he could have taken. And it was just, he should have just said exactly what he wanted to see happen. Like, we are a united front. The three of us are together, as opposed to this, like, I hope you understand if you read between the lines and what I'm trying to express to you in this moment.
Right. Now, I want to get to one more miscommunication before I have another idea. And that is the what he was trying to communicate to High was different than what actually got communicated to High. Like, he was trying to say, let's have a discussion. But what was communicated was, if they draw rocks, High only has a 25% chance of losing versus a 75% chance of getting rid of one of the people who aligned against him. So, you know, it was just a completely different outcome than he had expected.
Right.
He just gave up because High could refuse to budge. As I said in the Why Jenny Lost podcast, High got to play a game of chicken with someone who said, well, actually, my car automatically swerves to the right, so don't worry about it, which enabled High to say straight up that he was going full speed ahead straight.
Right. And the thing with High, too, is that in that moment, High knew he was at the bottom. So if Lydia goes, he's next.
Right.
He's like, he's playing the numbers, looking at it. What does he have to lose at that point? Because, yes, he is going to be the next in line. And so this is why, when you are at a point where you might be going to rocks, the numbers become very significant, and you have to realize what type of ripple effect is it going to have if you flip in that moment, if you do go to rocks, what's going to end up transpiring. And, you know, one half or one group can gain momentum because of the one, you know, whoever ends up picking the wrong rock, or there's so many permutations that you can work through. And you really have to be mindful of where you sit in the game at that point in time. And High knew, doesn't matter, I'm next if this doesn't go my way. So it's fine. We'll do this. We'll take the chance, because I have a better chance of doing that than just getting voted out next.
Yeah, you know? I mean, it's very similar to the situation you found yourself in. You didn't want to go to rocks, but you knew if you flipped, you were dead.
Yeah, I was done. My game was done. And so I was very aware of that. As much as it was terrible and I didn't want to, I knew that I wasn't going to last any longer if I flipped. I was going to be just, I wasn't going to win the game. That's what it boiled down to.
Right.
And so I think that High was very aware of where he was, but he played it so much better than I did, because he was like, God damn it. Yes, I will draw rocks.
Yeah.
I should have done the same thing.
Yeah. Now, this takes us to one of the listener questions about what Daniel should have done after the votes were read and before going into negotiation. Now, what you have said is put up a stronger front. Just say, hey, say it openly. What I'm thinking, I mean, besides not saying he didn't want to go to rocks, that would have been a good start. But also, with the way tribal councils are these days, why not just stand up, pull Mike and Chanel, or even just Chanel, aside for a private conversation?
You want the whispering.
Yes. Whisper to them. Who says it has to be public?
That's
then
true.
He avoids the whole miscommunication, because he takes them aside, whispers in their ear, and says, hey, look, we need to form a united front to try to pressure High.
And if anything,
have all of that.
Right. And what that would do in that moment is all of a sudden High might go, damn, like, you know, these three are clearly together and I'm all by myself over here, because it's Lydia's on the chopping block. And so that can certainly have an effect on how High is going to respond to that moment, because he might not come out swinging like he did. He might be ready to fold and be like, all right, if all of you want to do this, I'll go with you. That's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he might have just stayed strong in his resolve, like,
and it's quite
about.
Possible, because he might have realized too that I'm going home next, so it doesn't matter. So we go back to that. I mean, this is one of those discussions that we could go round and round and round, because there's so many, you know, what could have been, what should have been, and all of these things, and Monday morning quarterbacking. But it this just shows you how many variables there are in Survivor and right. things that are just outside of your control. And so there are certain things that you have to control. And I learned that by living it. I did not control the moment the way that I should have. And I think Hai walked into that and controlled the moment exactly the way that he should have.
Right.
And Daniel just didn't do the same.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what, you know, going back to kind of what sparked this all, again, another miscommunication. What Daniel saw, well, I don't know if this was a miscommunication. What Daniel saw from his perspective was how badly Chanel misplayed Shipwheel Island. Mm. We saw on the show that she had planned not to risk her vote and knew how important it was. And Daniel reemphasized in his interviews, talking about how they discussed it ahead of time, etc. And yet she did exactly the wrong thing.
Right.
That was the betrayal he later spoke about. Okay. I didn't get that from the show.
Mm-mm.
And I don't think she got that on in the moment, which mm-hmm. again, that leads to the miscommunication. But
right.
he still stayed loyal, even though it meant going along with the cockamamie plan to try to get Hai and Lydia to split the vote. You know, as he said in interviews, in hindsight, he should have turned on her in that moment. Okay, I understand that. But in his defense, he had approximately zero time to think about it. You know, she got back, they had to do something, and then they were off to tribal council.
Right.
It is interesting to note, though, that for a guy who was, you know, said to be squirrely by some of his tribe mates, he actually lost his allies in large part because he stayed too loyal to his tightest ally. Mm-hmm.
And I do think it's interesting that he didn't, and maybe he did, and I didn't see it or hear it, but did he even call her out in that moment when they had nope. that, you know, and that's another part of it where, again, it's if she is your closest ally, if she's the one that you're playing this game with, and she comes back and tells you this, the first thing out of his mouth should have been, we agreed we weren't going to do that. Like, what are yeah. you doing? Like, why did you do that? We had, yeah. we talked about this. Can you help me understand why you did what you did? Because this really could throw a wrench in the works at this mm-hmm. point. Now we're in trouble. And I think that, I know they didn't have much time, but that's a moment that you need some clarity. You need some understanding because this is what happened. He was clearly troubled and bothered by it, but still went along with it. And then everything blew up when they went to tribal council.
Yeah. And this is based, you know, that was basically the answer to another of the listener questions. What should he have done when he found out about the lost vote? With the benefit of full hindsight and time, it's easy to say he should have changed the plans, you know, either push to vote out Mike or Jenny, so there was no vote problem, or just flip on Chanel altogether. I can understand why he wouldn't want to flip on his tightest ally at a moment's notice, even if she did make a terrible mistake. So since they were already in between two duos, I just think switching the target would have made sense. Like, okay, you know, each of these duos thought we were voting with them. We were going to vote out Lydia, but now I don't have a vote and Mike doesn't have a vote. What if we just vote out Mike or vote out Jenny, as ended up happening?
Mm-hmm.
Then we don't have to worry.
Right.
Problem solved, and there's no big fight.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But, all right. Before we leave this section, I think we've covered that tribal council pretty in depth there. we do need to discuss, as part of this section, how Daniel handled Mike's idol. And I'm not talking
about his pants
in his pants or losing it. Yeah. I'm talking about how he read through it and analyzed all the possible ways.
It could be dealt with.
I thought it was brilliant and it gave them the opportunity to come up with strategies around it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, he passed the info to Chanel and they considered voting Mike out until he reread it and realized that wouldn't stop the idols from coming into the game. Though it would have paused it and perhaps allowed him or Chanel to find the re-hidden idol if it had been Survivor 41.
No, I do think that it is an interesting idea with these advantages. And I will say that was one of the things he actually talked about in his pregame press was in the current era of the show, there are too many twists and too many hijinks that make it very difficult for the strategic players to really plan things out. So
God, how is he not your winner pick after him saying that?
I know, right? You know? I considered it.
So did I.
Yeah. I mean, I really enjoyed his ability to try to like think things through. And I do think he is, I've said it, a very analytical thinker. And so it doesn't surprise me that he spent a lot of time rereading and wanting to reread to make sure that he completely understood what was on that parchment in relationship to the advantage, because we have seen them almost get misplayed because they are misread. And it's not like production's going to jump in there and be like, oh, hold up. They clearly don't. And so, you know, I do think that it was fantastic to see him take something away from the advantage, where he was like, wait a second. No, I think we have a workaround here. And I think this is what we need to try to do. I really appreciated that he did that, because I do think that, unfortunately, with the new era of Survivor, all of the players up and coming are going to have to do this. You're going to have to figure out how to maneuver through all of these advantages and figure out how to work them into your game. And this was something I don't think production really saw coming. And all of a sudden, he and Mike were like, wait a second, time out. I think we can work through this one differently.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. We can move on to rule three.
So now we're backing up.
We're backing up. Yes. Speaking of Daniel, considering the different possibilities with Mike's idol, you know, this rule tells players to be flexible. And you know, we already discussed how Daniel probably stayed too loyal to Chanel for too long, though we did mention there were extenuating circumstances. But how do you think he did in terms of flexibility, you know, apart from his shoulder, other than that?
I really still, there was a lot of work to be done, because I do think that he came into the game with such an idea of how he wanted to play that though he tried to be flexible, it was like too late. You know, it was like a little too late to try to switch things up, which doesn't, it's not bad. I mean, he was like, I'm going to try something new. I'm going to take a different approach. I'm going to take a different angle. I'm going to go fishing instead of scheming and plotting. And they're all going to see that. And you know what? Maybe that's the most interesting part of his game, is that in his mind, he constructed how he thought other people were going to see what was happening. We just spent time talking about this with that tribal council, where he thought, oh, if I do this, this is what they will see. And I think that was a lot of what we saw in his game, that he thought that, oh, if I do this, they'll see this. If I act like this, this is what they'll consider. This is what they'll think. So was he trying to be flexible? In a way, yes. Was it too late? Yes. But he also was too loyal at the same time to Chanel, even though he probably should have been like, I'm done with you, Chanel, because you went against everything we just talked about. So it was an interesting mix of trying to be flexible, but at the same time, not to his benefit. He didn't choose the right things to be flexible about. So I think he could have made different choices in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, I think he chose the right things to be flexible about early on, because he, you know, we had talked about he created a situation where he and Chanel were in the middle of two other duos.
Sure.
To choose which way to go. He was clearly getting a ton of information from both sides, convinced each side that he was with them. And I think under normal circumstances, they would have turned on one duo and thereby had a foursome plus one, and things would have been mostly okay. That plus one would have been like, oh, heck, I'm screwed.
What kind of accent was that?
I'm shizzed.
Oh, shiz.
Yeah. Oh, shiz, I'm fudged. Yes.
That sounds so wrong.
Yes. But the thing is, the whole point of this rule is you need to be flexible. And Survivor 42 really threw some crazy shiz at him. And he just wasn't able to handle the way it all came pouring down when the shiz hit the fudge. You know, it was a lot.
And this is why I do think that we've missed out on some of Daniel as well, just because advantages, right? I mean, this two people not having their vote and all of this craziness that ended up transpiring. And I do think that he was so prepared to play this game, was very cognizant of the fact that there is going to be new advantages and, mm-hmm. and new things that will cause chaos. But you can't anticipate certain things in Survivor when you've never seen it before. Now people coming on to 43 and 44 are going to be aware of this idea. They're going to have to try to figure out how do you orient your brain around the idea of someone not having a vote when we're going to tribal council, something that you've never mm-hmm. anticipated before. And so I do think that I feel for him because I think he missed out on playing Survivor the way he wanted to play it because all of a sudden, as you said, the shiz really hit the foot.
Yes. All right, we can go to the fourth rule, which tells players not to let their emotions control them. Now, I think Daniel did well in terms of this rule right up until that first tribal council,
mm-hmm.
much like some of the other things we've discussed.
Mm-hmm.
It's like his game had two segments. There was before they went to the first tribal council and then after, or at and after. Even though he knew full well that he was going to be turning on one of the other duos, I saw no indication that he became emotionally unable to cast his vote appropriately.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he knew his real number one was Chanel, he had no problem becoming great friends and allegedly number one with Mike, lying to him over and over again, and even potentially planning to vote him out over the idol.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see any issue here before that first tribal council?
No, I was very impressed with how mm-hmm. well he was maneuvering his way through and being very logical in his thinking in regards to the game that needed to be played. And then it happened.
Yes. Yes, it happened. We came to that tribal council. Now, we already discussed multiple times how he had a vision of what would happen. He expected to show Chanel and Mike that he was standing up for them and protecting them. But instead, as you mentioned earlier, he felt completely abandoned and alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was, as I said earlier, due to them not understanding what Daniel wanted out of them and mm-hmm. thinking he had thrown at least Chanel under the bus. And the result, as he said in interviews, and you may have said this already, you may have quoted this, he felt totally and utterly alone after already being betrayed.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And he further,
go ahead. It's fine.
He further noted to Dalton, Survivor is a game of strategy, but what makes Survivor a beautiful game is it's also a game of human beings who are not robots.
Yeah.
And he's right. You know, as much as we say in this rule that you basically have to act like a robot, it's rare that we someone who can pull that off while not appearing like a robot who nobody wants to play with.
Yeah.
You know, and he continued, I had a human moment where I was just angry and upset. And I'm like, I've gone all in on Chanel as an ally. I've shown utter loyalty to her up to this point. And at that moment, I just lost my cool, which was a bad thing for me to do.
Listen, you're preaching to the choir, Daniel, because like I feel you. I've been there. Like, it's hard. Like, people do forget that things that happen in Survivor can hurt. Because you are a real person when you're playing this game and you're playing it with real people. And so, yes, we heard him talk about how when you go on Survivor, you're allowed to lie. People expect you to lie.
Right.
But it still can hurt. And when you find out that you've been betrayed in such a way, when you find out you really are all alone and nobody wants to play this game with you, I mean, I had there was a confessional that David Wright did about me. Like, I saved the girl nobody wants to play the game with anymore. You know, it's like I was that person. And so it is a very hard thing to have to come to terms with. And then you really have to figure out, okay, how do I save myself? What do I do? Now, yeah. I had more options available to me, which was lovely. He had very limited options. And so this is what we've talked about before. The size of the tribe at the time can also affect your ability to maneuver your way back in. And I think he really did try to do that. But I don't fault him for having an emotional response at that moment, because that's hard when you realize, damn it, I'm by myself right now. And no one's got my back. And I'm fighting and I'm trying to stay here, but my fighting is only making it worse because I'm throwing shade over here and I'm talking about that one over there, and it's not helping. But it's a very honest, natural reaction when your defenses are up and you're realizing your kind of like your true self and where you are in that moment. And it can be very, very hard.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I have found Daniel to be both self-deprecating, and I think he showed in interviews and on social media that he could be objective about his own gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
But another, you know, one of the questions that we were asked is how he should have handled this situation instead. And honestly, that's a tough one. I'd like to say that if he made different decisions beforehand, he wouldn't have ended up here. For example, as I mentioned before, switching his vote to Jenny in the second vote. But once he realized he was truly going to be alone, if he hadn't been able to or thought of the other things I mentioned previously, like making it a live tribal, getting up, taking people aside, whispering, maybe he should have gone to rocks. Call High's bluff. You know, if he knew he was truly alone, he had lost both Chanel and Mike. And it put him in a situation not unlike yours, where you knew if you didn't go to rocks, you were doomed, like we mentioned earlier. But that is a tough call for him to make. I mean, you were prepped for it. You did not have to make that decision on the fly. Everybody in that tribal council knew this is where the dividing line is. We're going to have to hold fast. And he didn't have that, you know, advantage of, you know, foresight.
Right.
So it's hard to do that in the moment. I think he was relying on High and Lydia to keep their word about not holding it against him. And I mean, you know more than anyone how difficult it is to go to a rock draw or how difficult it is to go out on a rock draw.
Mm-hmm.
Now, imagine doing that this early in the game.
Yeah.
We would have been sitting here saying he and High were crazy to do that.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, too, I think part of the problem was that it was like a boulder, like a snowball, I guess is a better thing. Like as the tribal kept going, it just kept getting worse for him because he kept talking. and I don't say that. Like that moment was supposed to be, let's convince everyone to come together. Mm-hmm. And I think what he did was convince everybody to splinter away from him.
Well, they came together just on the other side.
Right. It was like, let's get away from him because he's clearly saying things that we don't like. And he's shining a light on all of these bad things. He's throwing me under the bus. But I think in that moment, as you said, he had really prepped for this. There was no forethought in regards to this. And all of a sudden we're presented with this thing that we've never seen before. We've got missing votes. We're going to have a rock draw potentially, but those people aren't part of the vote. And so it's only the two of us. And it's a lot of like craziness to try to process. And so I do think that he tried to walk into it being like, okay, I'm in control of this, when he really wasn't. And it's just unfortunate that it just kept spiraling the way that it did for him, because I do think a lot of what was happening was knee-jerk reactions. When he tried to call Chanel out for saying Lydia, and then she was like, what are you talking about? He's like, you told me to vote out Lydia. Like, that's what you told me to do. And then he's like, Lydia, she told me to vote you out. And so like that's not the moment to try to convince Lydia that anybody did anything, because Lydia's on the chopping block. You need to be convincing the other people to be voting out Lydia, not talking to Lydia about, no, Lydia, really, that's what she told me to do. You're trying to save face when that's not the time to be doing that.
Right. All right. We can go to the fifth rule, which is about the social game, and reminds players they need to pretend to be nice and play the social game. Did I just say social game twice? Yes, I did.
Yeah, I think so.
Anyway, it's really about the social game. Roxroy just makes me want to remind people it's really about the social game.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also about keeping their politics to themselves. To start from that last part, which, quite frankly, we rarely even mention, Daniel came into the game acknowledging that there was a lot to dislike about him in terms of being unyielding when it comes to certain political and ideological values. But he also indicated that he knew enough to follow this rule and keep those politics to himself. From what we saw, he absolutely did.
Mm-hmm.
So what did you think about the rest of his social game?
I think he was really an enjoyable person as far as his desire to form relationships, keep certain things in check. And I do think that there is a component of him that comes through because of the career choice that he has made as well. I mean, I think that I was very aware of the perception that people were going to have if they found out I was a lawyer. Now, he was openly telling people that he was, but he was trying to portray himself in such a way that that wasn't going to be an issue. It wasn't going to be a problem. So he made a lot of decisions before even going out there to help make himself appear more likable, self-deprecating. Talked about even his utilizing his scar as a way to form bonds with people. So he clearly thought through all of these things. You've mentioned his hair, that he wanted to have the bigger hair. So all of these were conscious decisions that he made. And they're all those things that you can control about your survivor game. So if anything, I think he was really trying to take control of his social game in the best way possible. And he was doing a hell of a job until we got to that tribal council.
Yes, exactly. To my mind, he had no problem until everyone got mad at him.
You know, that tribal council happened.
Yeah. He told Dalton, he said, Jenny, Hi, and Lydia didn't get along with each other, but guess who got along with everyone? Chanel and I. And indeed, that was one reason he and Chanel were so easily able to play both duos, because they got along with all of them while the other duos didn't.
Right.
Now, even after that tribal council, I think he still seemed to be friendly with everyone. They were just hating on him a bit more when he wasn't around. But that's kind of human nature. If someone does something you don't like and you generally like them, then you can kind of, whatever. If someone else does the exact same thing and you're already mad at them, it becomes a whole different issue.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that, I think, you know, I think I'll have a little bit more to say about that in a couple minutes, but yes.
Okay.
So we can at least move towards that by going to Rule 6, which warns against being too much of a threat. I think the others certainly viewed Daniel as being a threat in multiple ways. He literally tried to vote Lydia out, which, of course, marked him as a threat to her and her ally, Hi. He told Chanel about Mike's idol and lied to Mike, which made him a threat there to Mike as well. And in Chanel's mind, he put her in the firing line, making him a threat to her.
Mm-hmm.
So with all of this in mind, I don't think any of them trusted him to stay tight and emerge, even though I bet he would have, at least for a while.
Yeah, I think that he found himself in an interesting position, because you've gone through all of the reasons why he was a threat to each person individually. Mm-hmm. And this is something that is not focused on enough when it comes to Survivor. We've talked about it occasionally, how someone can become a threat if they are a threat to your game. And I think that that was something that each person saw individually in regards to him, that it's not like this all consuming reason why he was a threat, but there were reasons why he was a threat to each of them. And then going into emerge, knowing that the numbers are going to matter so much because there's such a small amount, you've got three tribes probably going in with four, and that four needs to be tight. And if you have one person that you're learning all of this new information about how he's been playing all of you, and it's all come to light, you're certainly not going to want to carry that person into the merge with you, because this is the concern that you each have.
Yes.
Whose back is he truly like going to have when we get there? Because I thought he had mine, but then I found out he had yours. Yeah. And then he was throwing you under the bus. So it becomes too much of a question. And it's sometimes you want to go into a situation like that. Not sometimes, I think all of the time, with the knowns as opposed to the unknowns. And he was a very big question mark at that point.
Yes. Yes. Now, there was another way he was seen as a threat if there wasn't a merge, which takes us to Appendix A, which is about the tribe keeping their end goals in mind when voting. And we talk about voting out the weak and the strong, then the weak and the strong. Because of Daniel's injury, he was definitely viewed as one of the weak when it came to the challenge. Mm-hmm. When Vati sat out Daniel in this episode, Jeff commented on it again. And if they were to stay in tribes, because remember, they already had expected a swap at some point, and there wasn't.
Right.
They didn't know when a merge was. So if they were to stay in tribes and they voted someone else out, Daniel couldn't sit out. They'd all be even.
Mm-hmm.
And if he had, as he said here, quote, very little to add in this challenge, then what about next time when he would be forced to play?
Right.
You know,
I do think that was a little unfair of Jeff, though, just because we found out that the doctor was saying you can't be in this challenge. It wasn't even like he had a choice because
I guess
you want to wreck your arm forever. Okay,
right,
go ahead.
Right. He said he would ask the doctor, can I do this challenge? And every time the doctor would say, you ought not to do this challenge.
Right.
If you do this challenge, you potentially face long-term problems if you screw up your shoulder in this challenge. So right. He listened to the doctor. So, yes, I am similarly annoyed at Jeff's comment because it's like, no, Jeff, you know what the doctor was saying. Right. You're in full recognition. You don't need to be saying that out loud.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know? And yeah, Lydia noted to us on the show that Daniel was a liability. And in a secret scene, she further called him a sinking ship and said he had nothing to give, even wondering if he was lying about how bad his injury was.
Well, he did go fishing, so he couldn't have been sinking too much.
And that's exactly it. Yes. It brings us back to that complaint. You know, now we already discussed what he was thinking when he was doing it. But once again, as you already pointed out, he was thinking one thing.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the tribe was totally in a different direction.
Right.
And so, no, it wasn't going to calm them down. Instead, they were seemingly annoyed because he couldn't do the swimming challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are two aspects to address here, the reality and the perception. Reality was that, as he said in an interview, he could still swim. He couldn't do challenges that might have sudden movements and things hitting him and the like. He said it was all about range of motion and he couldn't control his range of motion in the ocean in a challenge. And I agree. You know, spearfishing the way he was doing it was basically floating around, gliding, not fast swimming in a challenge, not pulling on things and carrying them, you know. So from a factual perspective, they really had nothing to complain about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but this is one of those components of Survivor. You already have annoyed people.
Yes.
And now they're just going to keep piling on.
Yes.
And so it's like, all right, well, he's done all of this stuff over here. And the guy can't perform in any challenges. And now look at him. He's going out fishing. And you just want to keep piling on. This, we talked about this with Chanel. That I think she was part of that. Like, you just keep flaming, you know, like, what is
fanning
that?
The flames.
Yes. Like that's what I think was happening. Is that once there is this thing that has happened and this momentum starts building behind that person, you keep pushing everything you can at that person because you're like, well, it gives everyone else a reason to vote him out. And it won't just be me that's making the suggestion. Everyone else has seen it as well. And so that group think again takes over and you talk about it and you let other people see it and you let them kind of ponder it in their brain. And so I think he was really doomed by making this decision thinking, oh my gosh, they're going to see me not scheming and plotting. And instead they were like, look at what this guy's doing now.
Yeah. I mean, I think they had already decided he was the next to go.
Sure.
So this was the perfect time for them to solidify that with each other and pile on when he couldn't hear them.
Right. That's the other thing, too. You've left them all alone to talk about you.
Right. And this, was the perfect opportunity.
Now we're going to take a quick break for our sponsors, and we'll be right back. We're back, so let's get back to the show.
All right. So I think it is about time to wrap things up. What are your final thoughts?
All right. Well, I will say this, Daniel, rocks suck. Okay. I get it. I know why you didn't want to go to rocks. I 100% support that position. You don't ever want to go to rocks, but from one rock picker to someone who was avoiding picking rocks, your approach was a little bit off. And we've talked about that, obviously. I do think that there were a lot of components of his game that he could have improved upon as we talked about. But I really, truly believe he came into this game with so much momentum and almost overthinking it. And this is part of the problem with Survivor. Everyone's going to play a different game when they come into Survivor, and everyone is going to have a different idea of what their game is going to look like. I think that his analytical mind kind of took over and created these variables or these things that are going to happen in Survivor based upon all of the things that he's seen. It's almost like one of those books that you read where when you're reading the story and they're like, if you want the story to go this direction, go to page 63.
Yes.
Exactly. Choose your own adventure. And I feel like in his mind,
I don't think this was the adventure he would have chosen.
I don't think it was, but I think that that was how he kind of looked at the game of Survivor, that if I want this to happen, I'm going to do this. If I want that to happen, I'm going to do this. And everyone is going to also see what I want them to see without realizing everyone's played their own game. And what you think is going to be the perception is not necessarily going to be other people's perceptions. And we talk about perception a lot. And it's almost like you have to overthink it when you're playing the game of Survivor. Perception does become reality. And so if you have created this idea in your head what other people are going to see, you might be wrong. And I think that's what happened here. I think he was wrong in a lot of the ideas that he thought other people would construct from what was transpiring. And I think it just got away from him, where he came in playing a rather solid game, forming relationships, creating bonds, getting to know people, and having options. He really did have options at the beginning. But it was like once it blew up big time. Mm-hmm. And it was not the adventure he was choosing. And he didn't know what to do to fix it. So he just kept making it worse by saying the wrong thing, by throwing himself under the bus and adding to the things that he had already done to people that didn't know that he had done these certain things. And so it really kind of became that snowball, and he just lost control and he couldn't control it. When he thought that he could, it was too late. At that point, the decision had been made. He suddenly thought he was okay and that he had fixed it. But the approach that he took to try to fix it was not correct. And so I feel for him, because I do think that he could have been a continually great player if certain things had happened differently for him. And as we know, Survivor is very unpredictable. And that create your own adventure, he was not prepared for in that tribal council. And unfortunately, rocks didn't happen for him, but a lot of other stuff that happened that was really bad. So sorry, but that's my thoughts.
Okay. Earlier, I mentioned several reasons that we've seen floated as potentially explaining the vote against Daniel. Was it because he was paranoid? No, if anything, by the end, he wasn't paranoid enough because he trusted high to the point that he didn't even play a shot in the dark. And before that, he wasn't paranoid enough to consider the possibility that Chanel might turn on him. So that prediction slash explanation of his means he will not be taking over this podcast. Was it because...
an option?
Well, I just wanted to reassure people in Twitter land.
Okay.
Was it because he went swimming? No. As I mentioned, the decision was made before that ever happened, I believe. Sure, they made comments to each other about him, but that was a show of solidarity amongst themselves. With that said, the fact that the issue even came up because of his shoulder problem keeping him out of challenges was probably at least a little on their minds, but it wasn't a significant factor. Was it because he was the more transparent schemer? Sort of, but not quite in that way. It's interesting that for a guy who got pegged by his tribe mates as being squirrely, he actually stayed very loyal to his tightest ally, as I mentioned earlier. Chanel went against what they had discussed and lost her vote. He stood by her. She came up with the vote split plan, and he went along with it. He stood firm in his vote to show loyalty. But Daniel also said something in this tribal council, about the team game versus the individual game. And Survivor is always an individual game. Chanel didn't interpret things the same way he did, and she wasn't going down with a sinking ship. She and Mike didn't want to go to rocks, but they also didn't want to get into the debate. That left Daniel high and dry, and yes, pun intended. After it was over, Daniel was a man without an ally. He did his best to get back in with the others, and he thought he'd succeeded, but I mentioned earlier how High noted that once trust has been broken, it's very hard to get back. Daniel was seen as breaking trust with literally everybody else on the tribe, three of whom he had actually done so, and for the other one, well, she had broken his trust, and she didn't want him to, you know, tell people about that. He tried to get that trust back by admitting he'd been untrustworthy. A strategy that was not going to make any of his tribe mates feel better about him. He got caught in a hole that he hadn't necessarily dug, but he just kept digging it deeper and deeper when he thought he was filling it in. And that is why Daniel lost.
I like it.
All right. Now,
I hope we roasted him to pain and not to death.
Yes. So we've both given our final thoughts, and I wanted to ask you one post final thought. Okay. I did not prepare you for this.
You did not.
Daniel was the alternate for Adam on your season.
I know.
How do you think you would have done if by some, you know, tweak of the universe, their roles had flipped?
Well, I think I would have enjoyed him because he came across quirky. And also the fact that he owned being a lawyer, I would have loved, because that would have been nice to be like, oh my gosh, there's another one out here. You know, like, I didn't know that about Chris either. So I think, though, the big difference between he and Adam was I feel like there was a component to Daniel that came across that I didn't see with Adam. And I feel like maybe people would say that Adam's game was a little more messy and like Winners at War. Like, there were things that he did that were a little more like risky. And he didn't necessarily do that when he was in Millennials versus Gen X. So I feel like they are so very different that I don't know if I could have necessarily say, yes, I would have grabbed on to, you know, Daniel if he was that person standing there or sitting there on the boat across from me. There was something about Adam that I really appreciated. There was something that I just kind of saw in Adam. And I think that that's just a sense that you get from people. You just kind of sense certain things. And I don't know if I would have sensed that with him, but I do think he would have been fun to play with because he's certainly well-studied. He loves the game. And I think it would have been an interesting mix. But the lawyer thing, I'm very intrigued with. If we could have pulled off, like, maybe I could have told him secretly, like, by the way. But I don't know if I would have, because he might have went and told other people.
That's right.
So
that's right. I still, to this day, find it amusing that neither you nor Chris told each other you were lawyers. Mm-hmm. You're a prosecutor. He's a defense attorney, and you guys butted heads as if you had told each other.
It's weird, right?
I just find that funny.
It is quite funny. Yeah. It's like we just both sensed it. Like, there's something there.
Yeah. All right. Well, before we get to our predictions, let me remind everyone that
we don't need to do those.
Yeah, we do. That the rules we just discussed are in poster form and t-shirt form and
so many forms,
mug form.
Checklist.
Sweatshirt form. Again, just go to robhaswebsite.com/yxlostfeed.
Yes, you should. Definitely.
So,
all right. So that's it. So
predictions.
We're good.
We have three tribes of four.
I know.
All coming together in a fake merge before a real merge in a 2-hour episode.
Yeah.
So, hey, at least this season, we don't have a podcast to fill talking about why someone lost when no one lost. So let's hope they find some way to do this fake merge without that stupid hourglass. But
I think they're going to do it again.
I, this is one place I agree with Rob. I think they're going to do something. I think that Jeff took enough heat that even he realized it was a bad idea to do it the way they did it.
No. But here's the thing. They filmed them.
No, I'm saying he took heat from the players. I mean, remember how pissed off Daniel was and some of the others.
I see.
Danny.
Danny. I know. I just want to call Daniel Dan.
Yeah.
Dan. Like, I just want to say Dan.
Right.
But
So I think that even Jeff may have realized, maybe taking away the win.
You know, that's
from the
a really interesting point, because Danny really was very vocal. And I appreciate that so much. I love you for doing that, Danny, because somebody needed to call out that whole situation. Mm-hmm. You don't take immunity away from people.
Right.
That's Survivor. Like, that's what Survivor is about. You win immunity, you win immunity. That's it.
Right.
So that's very intriguing. I like this thought process.
Yes. So let's hope. Let's hope.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we heard Tori saying this week, and I mentioned it earlier, that she would be the first to jump. The thing is, Tori doesn't have any relationships with the other tribes.
Right.
In theory, there are a few people who could reconnect from Shipwheel Island trips or that initial fake blood amulet thing. Or Ika and Vati could look at Jonathan and say, we need to come together to get rid of him. But I am nothing if not dedicated. And I have been predicting Tori would go. And I still feel like that's the edit she's getting. Like I said, the part about her being the first to jump ship, I think that's what she's going to try to do. And she won't want to join some big anti-Jonathan alliance. I think the others on Ika will see her pulling the same stunts they've seen before. And they'll decide enough's enough. You know, they'll tell the others that she's untrustworthy and a snake. And everyone will come together and vote her off. Because that's what almost happened to Erica, if it hadn't been for the hourglass, or it seemed anyway.
Right.
You know, was her own tribe turned on her and told everyone else. And in a big merge like this, you're looking for someone for the easy vote.
Yeah.
And Tori could very easily be the easy vote. So, yes, it's true. I am once again sticking to my Tori prediction, and I was glad to hear T-Bird say the same thing on the recap podcast, so at least I'm in good company.
So let's just do a recap. So Mike has an idol. Marianne has an idol. And
Drea
has an idol. Oh, yes. My girl, Drea. That's great. That's good stuff. So this is interesting because I look at I want to say Jonathan's in trouble, but I also know Survivor enough that if they like him enough, they'll be like, let's just have a challenge where you have to hold your arms over your head with a bucket and not move for a significant amount of time. Like it will be something not puzzle related, I think, purposefully to give Jonathan an opportunity to stick around a little bit longer. They don't necessarily go right to this puzzle component at the merge when they start doing individual immunity challenges. It's more something physical.
Remember, the first one, if they do it like last time, isn't an individual. It's a six and six challenge.
But it, the
or
group
five
thing.
And five, right. I guess.
So no. I'm not worried about him in that regard, because if anything, he's probably going to help them win. But yeah. I do think that he's not long for this game, but I don't think he'll be going out first. The other person too, that I'm worried for, honestly, is Chanel, just because she is tied to Daniel, even though like he's now gone. But there was a lot of like dirty laundry that was aired. I don't know how much she necessarily fixed it. Numbers are going to matter 100%. So I just think it's going to be interesting if she falls in the wrong, however they do the split. She might end up being in trouble, just because I don't know if like Hai and Lydia will definitely like have her back. I don't know if Mike would even like fight for her. So I do have concerns for her, and I do have concerns for Tori, since she did announce that she would jump ship. But again, Hubicki's Law, they put it out there. Does that mean it's not going to happen if they say it? So maybe I should just be mean to you and be like, Chanel is my choice.
That's not being mean to me. That because it guarantees you're wrong. So
that means your winner pick gets to stay in line.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right.
So, is that what you're doing? Chanel?
Yeah, I'll do Chanel. Why not?
All right. All right. We keep hovering around these same people. It's like,
I know.
No.
Well, because there are certain ones that I just feel like Omar.
Right.
You know, I mean, like that guy's just like, he's just swimming his way right in there. He's just blending right in. Everybody just loves him.
Flying.
Yeah. Right. I mean, but it's just, I just think it's interesting that there are certain personalities that just thrive in Survivor. And he seems to have one of those types of personalities where he just kind of gets it and he understands. He's like, I just got to kind of take my time and be here. So like, yeah, there's just like certain people that I would never, that just don't, they don't stick out. Like Marianne has started to frustrate people, right? Like I love her. She's super sweet, but she's starting to wear thin on some people. And so there are certain personalities that come to the forefront and other people that don't. And Erica was one of those people. She really just kind of melded into her place and understood the dynamics. So it'll be interesting to see when they all come together.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, as we wrap up, I want to encourage people to check out the RHAP patron program at robhasawebsite.com/patron. You can get access to the weekly Survivor Academy podcast that we've talked about, the Patron 5 for 5 and more. When Rob isn't talking directly to everyone, there are the Facebook groups and Discord to keep you occupied with a great community of people, including us. You can talk about Survivor, Big Brother, life in general. So you can support shows like ours and everything in the network by becoming a patron at robhasawebsite.com/patron, or just click on the link at robhasawebsite.com/yxlostfeed. And once you get to the Facebook groups, make sure to say hello.
Yes, you should definitely do that. And also you should follow me at JessicaLewis89 on Twitter, or you should follow at David Bloomberg on Twitter. And follow us both. I don't know why I said or. Both, because David likes to try to take credit for tweets
that's not true.
But you should definitely follow us both. Get both sides of the story. We do live tweet during these Survivor episodes. And David Bloomberg spends a lot of time also posting his TikToks, his very famous TikToks,
mostly
Survivor related, but a lot of other reality TV related TikToks. So you should also check him out at David_Bloomberg for TikTok.
Yes, yes. Also, make sure that you're subscribed to all of the RHAP Survivor podcasts by going to our Yxlost feed page. You'll find great content like the Know It Alls, Taryn Stockwatch, Shannon Gus's Survivor International, the B&B, and much more. Also, there's a new podcast on the RHA, the Reality TV Wrap Ups Network, that brings you True Crime Tuesdays. Mari Forth and Sarah Carradine are co-hosts. Sarah, one time subbed for you when we were doing that was during the earlier parts of the pandemic.
Uh-huh.
They are co-hosts of Crime Scene, that's S-E-E-N, a true crime review podcast where they get to the heart of how true crime stories are told. They put documentary features, short series, and long-running episodic shows under the magnifying glass. Get it? Crime Scene under the magnifying glass. And examine what true crime stories can tell us about ourselves. With fascinating guests each week to discuss their true crime passions, new and recent releases and classics, Crime Scene has what you need to scratch that true crime itch. Check it all out at robhasawebsite.com/crimefeed.
Wow. There were so many Crime Scene, Crime Feed. That was a lot of good plan words there. I like it.
Yes, it wasn't me, but yes.
Oh, am I allowed to say thank you now?
You are always allowed to say thank you.
I know. I always forget.
You're allowed to say anything you want. You just might get yelled at. You know.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I might have to reevaluate that.
Yeah, that could be scary.
Yeah, let me check the loopholes in what I just said there. Yeah. I'm going to have Daniel read that over.
Choose your adventure. Yes. Here we go.
Yeah. Oh, my. Yes.
So I would like to thank Scott St. Pierre for all of the editing that he does, not only for Why Blank Lost, but also all of the incredible content on RHAP. He works tirelessly. I'm amazed to see when some of these podcasts get posted. It's incredible. So thank you, Scott, for all of the great work that you do. And also thank you to Will from America for our theme song. It's lovely, enjoyable, and very catchy. So we appreciate that very much. So thank you, Will, for that. Yes. And thank you, David, for another very long episode.
Yes, this was
what are
a long
we doing?
One. I mean, there was a lot of convoluted stuff to discuss with Daniel.
Apparently. And all of these questions from your secret admirer.
Yes. Yeah. Our secret admirer. Our. Yes. And thank you, Jessica. Normally, you know, I would say we'll see you back here in a week. But remember, everyone, we'll be on the RHAP Instagram account Sunday at 4:00 Eastern time. So pop on by there. Otherwise, we'll see you right here in a week. Bye.
Bye.
Jessica will turn it around.
They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why blank lost. And this is why blank lost. Ooh, baby, this is why blank lost.